You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
I saw somebody on social media being like, this was Skype's moment. Where is Skype for business?
I saw that. Oh, I had a really good chuckle over that.
It was so funny. I was like, you had one thing to do, Skype, and everybody is using Zoom as a verb instead.
And honestly, we still use Skype as well, but we still Zoom.
Yes. Yes.
I'll Skype you. What's the Zoom meeting?
Yes. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Well, everyone, welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous.
Welcome!
This is going to be a mini-sode, so we're not going to talk about a
mini-sode. So we're not going to talk about a full episode.
We're not going to talk about a full episode? Is that what you said?
That's what I said. That's what I sang.
That's what you sang.
I finished what I thought your sentence was, where it was going, since I interrupted you with songs.
I was going to say, yeah, it's not going to be a full episode.
It's not going to be a full episode.
But it could still be long. I mean, everybody knows how we do.
Oh, that's so true. I think the last few minisodes have been major
an hour.
Thirds.
Yeah, totally. You don't know. There's no intermission. It's not 15 minutes.
It's not anymore. Well, because all the rules are gone.
Yeah, no rules.
There are no rules.
No, we're just doing what we want.
Because intermissions don't exist right now. That's
the what?
Intermissions don't exist right now.
That's true.
So we are just taking the forum that we've been given in this time of need. We're going to use it.
Oh, man.
Oh, everybody. Yeah. Okay, before we get started, because...
Tell me.
I watched Hamilton for the first time.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched this so much more. I will say, because
the screener,
it's still not my favorite soundtrack. Mm-hmm, and we talked about that.
Yeah.
But I was always able to appreciate the incredible work.
The incredible
intricate work that was put into the score. Like that's a non-starter. Like that period.
Yeah.
However, now having seen it, the context of that music and the context of those words was, oh my God, it like really blew me away.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful show.
Yeah, it's a great show. I haven't watched the Disney Plus screening. As it was coming up, like tons of my friends were texting me.
Yeah.
Just like, sure, I was going to be just as excited as they were.
I saw it on Broadway.
Well, it wasn't even that. It's just like, you know, things don't always translate. Like the power.
Oh, completely.
And also the director of the musical directed the screen version, and it's his first time directing a screen version of anything. And so I am not the type of fan who thinks that everyone that I love is infallible. No, you're fallible.
Absolutely.
I will admit when you have failed. Like, you're never going to get a rosy colored, like everything you do is perfect word from me. You
shouldn't. I mean, that's authentic, but you and I are both the same in that we have very high expectations of other people around us. And having not seen the actual stage production, my reaction to the show itself was one that actually, I will say because it is a filmed stage production,
yeah,
it's probably better than you think it is. But because I don't have anything to compare it to,
right,
I thought it was absolutely gorgeous. So I don't know how you'll feel about it. I don't think they did a bad job, though. I will say that there are some areas where I wanted to see the whole stage.
Yeah.
But you were forced to go where the camera went. So that's the only thing that I was even just the tiniest bit disappointed in. But even that wasn't really, even that didn't disappoint the whole experience for me.
Okay. I mean, I haven't heard. Yeah. None of my friends so far have been, negative about it, which is good.
That's good.
I was bursting bubbles left and right the whole week. I was like, how do you people not know me? And you just assume. You ought to know first thing. You cannot assume what reaction you're going to get from me on like literally anything. You have no idea. So this assumption that I'm just going to be like over the moon, super excited outside my mind, you should put that to bed. I mean, I just was, I was like a mean clown.
I feel you though, because I think a lot of the shows that, and you know what, honestly, I will think, I was talking with my friend Juliet about this.
Yeah.
I was excited to tell you that I finally watched it because
I'm so proud of you though for watching it. I'm proud that you liked it a lot and I'm proud that you get it now.
Yeah. Oh no, totally. Yeah. I mean, I did get it, but there was, there is a disconnect when you only see one part of a show. But anyway, I was talking with Juliet about this and I was like, you know how I am. And she goes, yeah, I do.
That's how she starts the conversation.
That's how I got that. Yes. Exactly. You know how I am. I said, when something is intensely popular, I shy away from it. I don't want anything to do with the hype. And so because Hamilton has been that way since its inception.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I want to see it. And yes, I appreciate. And yes, I love Lin-Manuel Miranda and I love his stuff, but there's something about it being so popular that I just don't want a part of. Like, and is that, I mean, it's such a silly thing.
No, that's real.
But it's real.
No, totally. I had this conversation with, I have a handful of friends who, when I told them it was going to be a big deal and they need to get tickets now, they listen to me.
Yeah.
And so one set of friends who, I mean, they hardcore love the show now, but they were like, oh, all the hype. I was like, listen, please know I love you and I understand.
Yeah.
Like, I can give you all the space and grace for that, because so often people will hype stuff up to me and I'm like, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're like peeing our pants over this.
Right.
I said, but you guys, just go. And when it hits you, because it will, text me immediately. Honest to God, they're in intermission and they text me. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm like, okay, see, like this is one of the few things in your life. I promise, like, you're not going to be disappointed. But most of the time, frankly, I am disappointed. Most of the time, completely. You know, so I was like, listen, I'm not mad at you. I get it. You know, that's valid.
Yeah.
So
I just want to say one more thing and then we can start the episode.
I was going to say I had a funny story.
Oh, good. I want to hear it. I just want to say Philippa Sue is stunning. Stunning.
Did you see on social media? Hmm. Oh my God. Pamela, it's the cutest thing ever. There's this tiny little Asian girl who couldn't be more than like 2.5. Mm-hmm. Did you see it?
I did, but keep telling the story for our listeners.
Okay, and so the sweet baby angel is watching Hamilton, okay? And Pippa comes on, and she looks at the screen, at the computer, and she points and she says, "She looks like me!" And then her brother is like picking on her or whatever, and she's like, "No, no, it's me, it's me." And then her mom is like, who, where? And she points to Philippa Sue and she says, and her mom is like, that her? Is that you? And the little girl goes, yeah.
I love that. This is why representation is so important.
It really is.
Oh, it makes me so happy to see these little stories.
So cute. I watched it 5 or 6 times.
She's
adorable.
And squealed
every time. She's really cute.
She's real cute.
Oh my gosh.
Was that your funny story?
Yeah. So you wake up and you're like, this dream was weird, but also a lot of fun.
Yes.
Okay, so I had this dream last night. Okay, first of all, everyone knows Ebony is not an actor, okay? Not an actor, so this will never happen and really makes no sense. So I'm in a production of In the Heights. Just know, yes, I do know like pretty much every word to all the songs.
Oh yeah,
so,
love that show.
Same. And so I'm in the show. Knew all the words to the songs, right? That wasn't the problem. So the first part of the dream, my boss, I work for an ad agency, is directing the musical.
Okay.
He doesn't know anything about theater. Like, my boss is this really nice French man, doesn't know anything about theater. I tell him what I'm doing. He's like, good job. He doesn't know. Okay. He has no idea. But he's very nice and he lets me do what I need to do. So in this dream, he's like directing this. He's directing In the Heights, but then he's like throwing in songs. This is our last rehearsal before performance. He's just like throwing in some Cole Porter songs here and there. And we're just trying to like learn stuff on the fly. And I was like, what is happening? They're literally just handing us scores at the last minute. And we're all trying to learn them and come up with choreography. Okay.
Ebony, you had an actor's nightmare.
Is that what that was?
Yes.
I mean, we were doing it. We were getting it together. Yes. But our steps, our dancing was lots of box steps.
That's an actor's nightmare. I love that you had one.
So, okay. So then it's, again, it's the night of the show. And I'm like, okay, my costume, what am I going to wear? So I go into my boss's office. All of a sudden, my boss is not my boss. The director is now Lauryn Hill. Okay.
Actually, that would not be so bad for In the Heights.
No, that wouldn't be so bad. That'd be pretty great. And so I go into what's now Lauryn Hill's office and I'm like telling her what I want to wear for my costume. She tells me the show's set in the 80s. And I was like, since when? Since when is In the Heights set in the 80s? She's like, no, it is. And so I like tell her, okay, I'll adjust my costume this much. And so I tell her what I'm going to do. And her way of approving my costume is to turn on the song Ready or Not by the Fugees and dance to it. So we're dancing in her office to Ready or Not by the Fugees. And then I woke up.
Amazing. Oh, it reminds me of my own actor's nightmare that I had a couple of weeks ago.
What was that one?
That was amazing. So mine was that I was asked to fill in the last second for Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, no.
But it was for my own track, like the Wardrobe Mister's Confidant track. So I was like, oh, yeah, I can do that. It's only been 10 years or longer, probably longer at this point. It's 10 years. Exactly. Anyway, so I get there and I was like, okay, no, I can totally do this. So I'm thinking it through and I'm going through everything. But then I look and I don't have any makeup. And I was like, okay. So I was like, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. So I asked my friend Tana, who was in the show with me, but is also a current friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Tana, can I please use your makeup? I don't have to use the eye stuff, but like maybe some lipstick or something. And she goes, yeah, just use my whole caboodle. And so I opened up the caboodle. There are 3 lipsticks and they are all shades of brown. So, okay, great. So I use like one on my lips and I use one for my old age makeup. And I was like, okay, it's fine. I can do this. Then I look over, I have no bobby pins. So I can't do my prep for the wig. But that's okay because I can't find the wig room. And then I don't have a costume, but I have tights. I just don't have a corset. So I put on my tights and I wrap myself in the robe and I'm thinking, I guess I'll just put the costume on without a corset. And so I go and I'm looking, but there's nothing there. And then this like random person comes running in, like stagehand running in with a costume, not my costume, but a costume. And he goes, here's your costume. Put this on. I was like, okay, great. And so I put it on. And the only reason it won't fit me is because I don't have a corset. But then we suddenly like get it on and I'm like, great. Okay, it's fine. It'll work. And so like, I'm getting ready for my entrance and another rando comes over and they're like, your prop. And I was like, I'm sorry. It's been a long time since I've done this. And so he hands me this like bouquet of flowers, which isn't actually in the show, but whatever, that's beside the point. Cause this is a nightmare, right? And so I'm holding this bouquet of flowers. This is where it gets weird. I'm holding this bouquet of flowers and it suddenly turns into a cheeseburger and it's so hot that it is burning my hands. And so I put it onto the counter to like get it out of my hands. And I'm still getting ready for my entrance when another cast member from Phantom comes over. Her name is Anne Cannengeiser. She goes, Pamela, a cheeseburger. That looks really good. We should eat that. And I was like, Anne, it's a prop. And she's like, eh.
And starts so eating the cheeseburger?
We ate the cheeseburger. And then I woke up. It was so weird.
Maybe somebody just wants a cheeseburger. Maybe that's really what it's all about.
It's not about acting. It's not about being put on the spot or feeling out of control.
Just you want a cheeseburger.
Way. No stress. There's no stress in my life. I just want a cheeseburger.
Just want a cheeseburger.
Oh, Lord. That's fun.
That's hysterical. Oh, my Lord. Okay. Now that we've told our acting nightmares by one actor and one non-actor, at least Pamela's nightmare is legitimate. Mine, I don't know what in the world.
Listen, they all come from just a place of insecurity.
I guess so. So funny.
I know.
I mean, with all the stuff he was throwing at us, I mean, I was still killing it. We were all awesome. Still killing it. I mean, our choreography was mad, but like not our fault because he told us at the last second. So we're like, okay. But I had a dream a couple of weeks before where that one was really quite terrifying because I was like, I don't think I know all of my part, but at least this time it was like a collective, like the whole cast was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are always better.
Yeah, so much better. So much better. Okay, now we're going to talk about theater in the time of COVID. Okay, yes. Friends, this episode, we're going to break down, like I said, moves and closures, but also I want to empower you to help the community. Because here's the thing. You guys have been listening to this podcast. Pamela and I have been making this podcast. Mm-hmm. And if we say that we're true lovers of the theater and it's going through its hardest time right now, then we need to really be about supporting it. And so this episode will hopefully give you some websites and some tools to like know what you can do to help the theater community at large, because I mostly focused on New York City, but a few of these websites and Instagram handles and such can also help the theater at large.
Yeah.
Okay. So now for the Broadway closures and moves. So I'm going to go to moves first. Now everybody knows the Broadway League announced that the shutdown will continue until January 3rd of 2021.
Yes.
I watched, Metro Focus, which is a news show that is particular to New York City. It's on PBS on channel 13 on it's just called 13. That's all it's called. And so Charlotte St. Martin, who is the president of the Broadway League, she was on there and she was talking about the continuation of the shutdown. And it was an interesting conversation that she said she is cautiously hopeful. Mm-hmm. They have like 15 task forces that have been running for a while. But they're really mostly thinking about how to get Broadway back to where it was before. Mm-hmm. And I went back to Three on the Isle, which is a podcast that is produced by the American Theater Magazine. And Three on the Isle has three Broadway critics, Elizabeth Vincentelli, Terry Teachout, and the third gentleman's name will come to me any second, but they're all quite well known. And they had the young man who started Play Purview. And I'm telling you all, I really recommend you listening to that episode because he has the right attitude about theater. He sees this as a moment of innovation, which so do I. And I'm finding this is the perfect moment to really be changing things, not just racially, but also from a financial model and a business model standpoint. No time in history has theater been shut down for so long. So for us to really get a wider perspective on what theater can look like, what it can be, who can be a part of it.
Yeah.
It is really, this is a perfect moment for that. So I really think we need to be thinking outside of the box and how we make a more equitable theater community from all aspects. And so I'm really encouraged by what, you know, the people in my age group and younger are creating and the way that their brains are working in this time.
Totally.
Because I think we have a lot to look forward to. Change is good.
Yes, it is, especially within the arts, because the arts should mirror what is going on currently.
Yeah.
And for a long, long time, it has been a reflection on the water.
Yeah, yeah.
But not a true mirror reflection.
Right, right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Peter Marx is the other critic, by the
way. Thank you.
I just looked it up for you. You know, the way that you were talking, it makes me think of how, you know, how sometimes you've got all your windows up in your computer and you're working, but your computer is like super slow. And then it stops and it's like, you get the spinning wheel of death and you're like, come on. And so you shut down the computer and reboot it. But when you reboot it, all the windows are still there and your problem is still there. But so instead you have to close out all the windows and then reboot the whole thing. And then you start from scratch. And so I think that's kind of the attitude that we need to come to this with.
We do.
And say, this system is broken. And this is something in our country that we can change and shape from fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely we can. I just want to encourage people to not be sad or upset or necessarily angry about what's happening. Be that in a productive way where you're really working hard to make sure that all of these majestic theater professionals that we have who don't have work, put all of that energy into helping them find work and make work and supporting the work that they're making, but also like with legislature and getting them the financial support that they really need. So put all of that energy into a different bucket. Don't put it into being upset that things are going to change because they really need to. All right. So here are the moves. The Music Man, everyone knows Hugh Jackman, Sutton Foster. That's
the
now
reason Beetlejuice was closing early.
Yeah.
It's only because
I will say it's
not
Hugh and Sutton's fault.
No, it's not. This is the thing. It's going to be a beautiful production. I think it is simply because it is attached to who it is attached to.
Yeah.
You got that sound from me.
Yes, we both have the same feeling about this person. We do. So I'm pretty sure everyone can just guess if they've listened to enough episodes what we're talking about. So The Music Man is going to now open March 2021. Flying Over Sunset, which was a Lincoln Center production, which was like this odd new musical with like Cary Grant and two other famous people, and they were on LSD. I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
It was crazy. It's now going to open spring 2021. It's projected to so far. Carolina Change got moved to March 2021, which I did state in a previous episode. Yes. But then it was funny because I said that, and then the next day it was officially announced. It was like my brain just knew. I don't know.
You made it happen.
I made it happen because we really wanted Carolina Change to come back. So we're very happy. Plaza Suite is moved to March 2021. Birthday Candles, which is the roundabout theater play that was going to star Deborah Messing, will still star Deborah Messing as of right now, and that's moved to fall 2021 at the American Airlines Theater. And then 1776, directed by Diane Paulus, that as well is moving to spring of 2021.
I had another dream, not an actor's nightmare, but another dream involving 1776. It was the night, it was the night that I watched Hamilton.
Okay.
And
that
then I
makes
went
sense.
To bed. But here's the thing. It wasn't Hamilton that I was dreaming about. It was 1776.
Right. No,
and
that still tracks.
I couldn't get out of my mind was, okay, it's Abigail Adams. And who is the other woman in the cast? Who is the other woman character? And I couldn't get it. I was like, Abigail Adams and it's Martha Washington. It's Martha something. Shoot, not Martha Washington. Martha something. Jefferson? I just forgot again. But anyway, but like that was what was, and it was continual. I could not get out of the 1776 loop. And I don't even like 1776. I think it is like male privilege.
Yeah.
To the nth degree.
Yeah.
And I hate it.
It's not great.
It makes me angry.
I think that they're trying to do. So New York City Center did the. They did the concert. I mean, their concerts are like, it's almost a full production. What they do is really incredible. But they did that last season of 1776, and it was, I did not see it. So like, just everybody know that I didn't see it, but, it was the casting was more diverse. So it wasn't a bunch of white men on stage, but I'll be honest, when I heard it was happening, I was like, well, you're just trying to capitalize off what happened with Hamilton.
Well, and
like, I continue to feel this way.
A female director doesn't necessarily make your play more feminist.
No.
Dumb.
Yeah, I'm...
Martha Jefferson. It is Martha Jefferson.
Martha Jefferson. Good job. Good job.
It's just one of those. And it's like, ugh. It's so... It's like self-indulgent.
I mean,
and it's whiny and narcissistic, and I just
I'm very curious, especially right now with like all the Confederate statues coming down and like what we've got going on with like the Mississippi flag changing and things of this nature. Like, how is this going to play nowadays? And in the task force, or not the task force, our think tank, we've been having a lot of conversations about like this idea of why do we continue to do revivals and then try to make them more
instead of just doing new
palatable
material.
right
No, that is such a good point.
Yeah
because that's I you know, and there is a risk, but and I will also say that it is more of a risk to do something unknown than it is to do something that's known and has a following. But this is theater. Like, if we can't be creative and take risks in theater, where can we?
Well, totally. And all of these shows that people want to be reviving, I mean, they were new at one point. So it's like you, in order for theater to continue, you have to be willing to take risks and produce new work.
And
I really think it is.
Seats.
You really do. And, you know, speaking of that, it's really interesting because the We See You White American Theater came out with a list of demands, and it's 31 pages, and it's Whoa. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. I really suggest that you all read it. It's very thorough, very well written. And I think it's going to change what's revived and if things are revived because mm-hmm. of what they're asking. And all of the individuals that have signed their names to promising not to do work that does not follow these demands.
Wow.
I mean, you have really heavy hitters like Lynn is on there. I mean, it's incredible. So going down that same path, honestly, so, okay. The musical adaptation of Some Like It Hot.
It's God.
Right?
Seriously?
Yes. Yes.
Wait, there already was a musical adaptation of that. Wasn't it called like Sugar Babies or something?
Google that. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I know this one, it's going to be directed and choreographed by Casey Nicolaw.
Okay.
It was supposed to go to Chicago's Cadillac Palace Theater. But now it's going to go directly to Broadway. I mean, I worry about this because this is a similar situation we had with Tootsie, you know, mm-hmm. where.
Yes. Where you've got two white dudes dressing yeah. up like women so that they can get the privilege that they yeah. think that women have.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not coming up.
Okay.
So I might be wrong. It might be just another one of those 50s movies.
Okay.
But anyway. Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I know, girl. You know I know. You know I agree. Yeah.
Well, and like the idea, here's the thing though. It's like the device that made it outrageous in yeah. 1959
yeah.
was that this woman was falling for what she thought was another woman.
Yeah.
But that's not outrageous anymore.
No,
and
it's not.
We should not continue making stuff like that be outrageous.
Agreed.
There are so many other different, you know, devices and plot, you know, plot
and other stories that need to be told.
How about the story that the woman falls in love with the woman, and that's really exciting and fun.
That's the actual, yeah. Yep. Yep.
There you go.
I know.
Lord
I know.
Knows we have enough of those with the guy being whatever age and race and well, maybe not race, but like whatever age and state of health and blah blah blah, marrying the 20-something beautiful blonde bombshell
yeah.
that fits into society's accepted pretty. But you don't ever have that story told in just a human way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how about let's make that outrageous?
I know.
Sorry. I'm getting on my soapbox.
No, today. It's good. It's good because like my hope is that this list I'm giving you, some of these you should be really excited about.
Okay.
But you know, some of these I'm hoping things change. I mean, The Music Man is extremely white. Like it's yes. just so white.
I mean, you can have your tokens in there, but.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that
I don't know if you would ever.
I don't know if it was fully cast before everything shut down, but it's
I see what you're saying.
It
yeah.
could, it, you know, it's, but so far for what I knew, it was just, mm-hmm. it's not, people aren't excited.
It's interesting. Well, and it makes me think of the Pearl Bailey version of Hello, Dolly.
Yes.
Where essentially it's the same show just told with black faces.
Yeah,
With black people playing those roles instead.
I, as a kid, okay, so we did Hello, Dolly my senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Theater audience, let me just preference. I do like Carol Channing, but you guys, I could not. I was like, I knew I was going to have to listen to this cast recording repeatedly. And I was like, I can't listen to her. Yeah, I can't do it. Guess what I am well versed in? The Pearl Bailey version.
She's wonderful.
Because her voice I could listen to repeatedly.
Yeah.
And not feel like somebody was scraping a chalkboard. I am sorry. Yes. That is what Carol sounded
like. She's hysterical and she's wonderful to watch, but just to listen to the disembodied voice of Carol Channing is hard.
So I listened to Pearl. And you know what else? Because like, being a young theater kid and at that time, like acting, but being, you know, the token, one of the few, it was like myself and my cousin, Ben, honest to God, I kid you not. It was the two of us. Okay. The little chocolate drops. Okay. And so listening to her made me feel like what my parents had always told me, which was I could do anything, was actually true. Oh, and my mom didn't know. I think my mom did know Pearl Bailey had done it, but she also liked to listen to it. So when I would play it in the, I had the CD version.
Yeah.
When I would play it, my mom was very happy to listen to it because it was Pearl Bailey and Cab Calloway.
There would, And please correct me if I'm wrong, and I might be because I just kind of heard the story and now I'm telling you, but the story of the Hello Dolly, I think, started with Pearl Bailey doing her own version of it on the road when it was first out, because I think of segregated houses, but that might also be wrong. Okay. But it was so well received and popular that the audiences asked for it to come to Broadway. And so she brought it to Broadway. And I believe she was up for a Tony for it. She might have actually won.
She did.
She did win. That is truly exciting.
Yeah, it's really cool. I watched Carmen Jones.
Yeah.
So I knew who Pearl Bailey was. Yeah. And so when we were at the Borders in the you know, theater section, I had no idea she had ever played Hello Dolly. And so it was there. And I was like, Mom, look, nerdy theater kid. I was very excited that Pearl Bailey had played Hello Dolly. Most kids my age didn't know who that was. When I told my friends, I was like, you guys, I just couldn't do the Carol Channing one. And so I have this one. They were all like, wait, there's another one. They didn't even know.
Yeah.
There was another one. And a bunch of them had been like, had I known, I'd have gotten that one instead.
Well, like, you know, there's a movie too, right?
I think a couple of my friends got like the movie Barbara Streisand one.
It doesn't have all the music in it. But
yeah, it doesn't.
Problem, yeah.
Right. And so that was part of the problem with that too. But then when I told them I had this other one, they were just like, some of them were like, well, crap, if I'd have known.
You know, I've never seen Carmen Jones, but I had the soundtrack forever when I was in high school and I loved it.
Yeah, it's great.
Loved it. Dorothy Dandridge.
Yeah. I mean, it's not her singing voice, but
I know. Well, it never is in those movies, but she's gorgeous. The still shots of that is really stunning. And all of those CDs would come with the full libretto with all of the pictures. Love.
Yeah.
They don't make them like that anymore. No. Do they even make CDs anymore? I don't even know.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, like sometimes I wonder. So, okay, we're going on a far tangent, guys. I'm not going to apologize. When my sister was moving out of my grandmother's house, we found all of these old life magazines my grandmother had. And she had one with Pearl Bailey on the front.
Love.
As Dolly Levi. Love. And I have a picture of it on my phone. And I was like, you know, my mom was passed. So I couldn't be like, Mom, you know, nobody... And my sister is like, oh, that's cool. You know, nobody.
Did you keep the actual magazine?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We still have them. I mean, there was like a JF Kennedy one.
Yeah.
She had one with Martin Luther King Jr. Wow. I mean, it was crazy.
Amazing.
And I think it happened because our grandfather was in Life magazine. So maybe she got like a couple years subscription because that had happened.
Why was he in Life magazine?
I'll be honest, I'm not super sure why, but there's he was in it, and there's like this wonderful photo of my grandfather, and my mom and uncle were not born yet.
Okay.
Because they had my grandmother got pregnant 20 years into their marriage.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So the photo is with there's two little kids there, but it's my mom's, I think her two cousins, okay, or one cousin and then another kid from the neighborhood, because they were everybody in the neighborhood called my grandmother Aunt Florence, even though she wasn't actually their aunt, because they took the kids in for so, because again, it took them 20 years to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. So the kids would come over and watch The Wonderful World of Disney because they were the only people that had a television.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. But I don't know if it was because of the farm or what, but we still have like this frame picture of when my grandfather was in life. But
cool.
Anyway, long side story. So going back to what's coming. Yeah, Some Like It Hot. That's happening.
Boo.
And then MJ, the Michael Jackson bio musical. That's now scheduled for March 8th of 2021, at the Neil Simon Theater.
Why is that still going on?
I know.
It's just so problematic.
It is. It is. That's all I can say. Yeah. But then Take Me Out, which was meant to come, is now going to come to Broadway March 22nd of 2021, still at the Helen Hayes Theater, still produced by Second Stage.
Okay.
This is also fun. Ooh. Okay, Washington, D.C.'s Woolly Mammoth Theater Company has postponed Michael R. Jackson's A Strange Loop, which was originally scheduled to begin performances in September. It's now going to move to summer 2021.
Okay.
But this is a drum roll, please. It's a Broadway tryout. So it'll probably transfer from the Woolly Mammoth in DC,
from DC
to Broadway.
Awesome. Yeah.
So that's super fun. Sound inside. Mary Louise Parker.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's, you know what? That's the picture of the person that I got in my head, but I couldn't pull the name out either.
Okay. She was meant to have, two plays up. Let's see. Right. 2020. How I Learned to Drive.
Okay.
So that's coming. How I Learned to Drive with Mary Louise Parker is going to come spring 2021. That's what it was.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
All right, so here are the closures. Some of them we already know, right? Like Frozen's not coming back to Broadway. That's closed for good.
Yeah.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I'm really upset.
Yeah.
That's not coming back. The Hangman, not coming back. Beetlejuice, probably not coming back.
Right.
Carnegie Hall canceled all of its 2020 programming. The New York City Ballet canceled their fall 2020 season. They're hoping to come back on January 19th, 2021. We'll see. Lincoln Center, their Great Performer series. It's canceled through January 26th of 2021. They are hoping to begin February 6th, 2021, but we'll see.
Okay.
And then a few spaces in New York City, one that I especially loved and used so much. Mm. Shetler Studios, rest in peace. I love you. I will miss you desperately.
The one that surprised me more than that, though, because Shetler was always such a small studio and it was always kind of on the fringes. So you just never knew whether it was going to be open or not. And so it is very sad. But the one that surprises me the most is Chelsea. Chelsea Studios is where we had auditions for basically
Theater
everything.
Works.
Yes.
Yeah, Theater Works. Yep. Yep. They closed. And then UCB Theater. We know that closed as well. So rest in peace. Yeah, Theater Works, that came out this week. That was very sad.
It's all sad.
It is.
I mean, it really is. This is devastating. This pandemic is devastating. So I think it's so easy to kind of get caught up in what your own issues are within it. Like, I wasn't working for 4 weeks, or, you know, I'm back to work, but now I'm afraid that I'll get sick, or, you know, it's very easy to kind of stay insular. But if you just open up your eyes just the tiniest bit, you can see little glimpses of absolute devastation across the board and across the world.
Yeah.
But in theater specifically, it's very sad.
Here's a few statistics, and I'm going to give these statistics because I really, here's the thing is I feel like we talk so much about theater as a whole, as a group, and we do definitely talk about the actors, we talk about the directors, the producers. Please, let's not forget these are lives that have been forever changed by this pandemic. Some of them have lost loved ones. All of them, most have lost a majority of their income. I mean, this is a huge deal. And then, you know, let's not even talk about like the housing crisis that is just like slowly unraveling as evictions begin. So please think about theater, not just as this place where you have gone so often to like listen to a cast recording. Please, I beg of you to think about each and every voice that you enjoyed so much as a person who is suffering right now, who, if you are able, there are ways that you can help. Even if you don't have money, there are ways that you can help. Just to give you some statistics, 51% of arts organizations have canceled events into September of 2020. 47% of arts organizations have no target date for reopening. 10% of arts institutions are not confident they will survive the pandemic. That would be a loss of 12,000 organizations. 29% of arts organizations have laid off or furloughed staff in 2020, including the Broadway League. This is one, the Broadway League is the main trade organization for Broadway. They had about 40% or more of their staff that was furloughed, and about 10 to 20% of those people were no longer have jobs, period. They've had to be laid off. So, please, I beg of you to think about these people who've brought you so much joy and to just really support them in this time. 94% of arts workers report income loss in 2020. 79% of arts workers experienced a decrease in creative work that generated income. 61% of those said they had a drastic decrease. 66% of arts workers are now unable to access the supplies, resources, spaces, or people necessary for their work. These statistics I got from an Instagram called Be an Arts Hero. So that's the handle is @BANANArtsHero. And they're really working hard to build a campaign that's going to speak to the senators so that by August 1st, which is only a few weeks away, there will be funding in place for people who've worked in the arts because the unemployment runs out at the end of the month. So a lot of people are going to be in a lot of trouble. So again, if you are on Twitter or Instagram, go to @BeAnArtsHero. You can also go to the website, beanartshero.com. They're also giving ways where you can contact senators. So please go there, contact, email, call, do whatever you can to really get attention to be paid to adding them to the next stimulus package. Mm-hmm. London, the UK, sorry, released a new stimulus package, which actually gave $2 billion to the theater community. And they were shocked. Like, the theater community in England was absolutely shocked that they got that much money. It was more than they expected. And they were going to be in a really serious trouble. A lot of theaters were going to have to close. I mean, it was going to be absolutely devastated if they didn't get some relief. And so having $2 billion is a huge deal for them.
Yeah.
So all that to say that, you know, the way that theater here in America is structured is obviously much different from the way that it's structured in Europe. All that to say that we are a scrappy group, and we have for so long sort of functioned outside of the government and functioned on our own, because, you know, things like the NEA have been slowly sort of defunded.
Yeah.
And so, you know, really, honestly, the arts community at large has felt sort of shunted. I think that we in America still have this idea that, like, it's more of a luxury, and not essential. And it is absolutely essential to humanity.
Yes.
Having the arts is essential to humanity and to us being a well-rounded culture. Like, we cannot be the leaders of the free world without having arts. We will not be that. There's no possible way without having the arts community. We absolutely have to support them. And so here are some other ways besides be an arts hero that you can do that. You can go to the Actors Fund and donate. Playwrights Horizons has a bunch of links to help theater artists. You can go to the Freelancers Union. They have a website. Also go to #SaveTheArts. What's happening at #SaveTheArts are a lot of people are posting photos of themselves doing the work and then adding #SaveTheArts just to generate sort of word of mouth about all the people who are working in the arts, how important it is. So if you are somebody who is a maker, who is an artist, I encourage you to post a photo of yourself in Twitter or Instagram or on Facebook. I don't know how hashtags work on Facebook, if I'm honest, so I don't even know if that's accurate. Yeah. I only know how they work on Twitter and Instagram, but post a photo of yourself doing the work and then add #SaveTheArts.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Okay. New York Theater Workshop's website has a fantastic list of grants, GoFundMes, all kinds of things that you can go to. art-newyork.org, which is Art New York, the Alliance of Resident Theaters. They have a bunch of resources there. The New York Foundation for the Arts has emergency grants. So if you know people who are struggling, who need some help, absolutely go there. Also the website arts.timesquarenyc.org has a ton of awesome resources.
I'll get a list from you and I will post it when I post this episode as well. So you guys don't have to remember this. We'll have it listed out for you. Go ahead and continue.
And then the last one that I have here, there's a ton more, but is brickartsmedia.org. And that is spelled BRICARTS media, MEDIA.org. And they also have a slew of resources. Again, you can also go to, like I said, beanartshero.com.
I have an email from a friend of mine about Be an Arts Hero, and it has all of the info. So I will share that as well.
Okay. It's awesome. I've been following them for a while. and reposting things. And then I just wanted to share a little bit of Jesse Green's, that article was just really, so I'm just going to read the end, and Pamela and I will just muse our thoughts, and that's how we'll end this episode.
We're very good at that.
Through it all, the institutions that might have been expected to promote a larger vision of the importance of theater, the American Theater Wing, the Broadway League, the League of Off-Broadway Theaters and Producers, even the unions, have seemed largely complacent and uncoordinated. For months, I've been waiting for industry groups to galvanize themselves into meaningful action as they did in Britain, and as Black theater artists have proved can be done here too. Instead, coronavirus has rendered theater leaders voiceless and useless. Mm-hmm. Even small accommodations to the moment seem beyond their abilities. Plans for ticket refunds and the eventual resumption of performances have been ineptly tossed and fumbled. Or take streaming theater, the promising format which at least keeps the work of playwrights and actors in front of the public while in-person performance is impossible, yep, ought to be widely embraced as a stopgap measure.
Yes.
I personally think it should be more as a stopgap measure.
I think it should, yes, I know we've talked about that before. We'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about it later. Instead, the inability of the parties to create workable new contracts means that most productions can be streamed only briefly and under strict limitations, which is why so many wind up as benefits for the Actors Fund. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be simpler to pay actors directly? But the American theater's biggest failure is the one that renders it helpless in an existential crisis like this, in allowing itself to be cast as just another industry, a role it does not even play very well. It has disowned its true identity as a public entitlement. Will anyone make that argument now?
Imagine for a moment that Jeffrey Seller, Scott Rudin, and Thomas Schumacher, commercial producers who know a great deal about wrangling concessions, assembled a dream team delegation that also included Lin-Manuel Miranda, Mary McCall, Equity's executive director, Charlotte Tate Martin, the Broadway League's president, Oscar Eustace, the public theater's artistic director, and Todd Hames, the Roundabout Theater Company's chief executive. Bring in regional theater heads like Joseph Hodge at the Guthrie in Minneapolis, and Maria Manuela Goyanis at Woolly Mammoth in Washington. Let Jeff Daniels and Audra McDonald join them as they buttonhole representatives. Have Stephen Adley Gurgis write the script. And if they did not succeed in obtaining relief, they might at least demonstrate, as the British have done with surprising success, that the theater is the crown jewel of our democracy too, not just the beating heart of a dying cash machine.
Yes. Yes, Jesse, yes. When I read that, I was like, yes, we need a delegate. Yes, we need all of these people to speak up. This is the problem. And it has been a problem for a long, long time. You have so many different unions and so, like, it feels very much like producers against the creatives.
Yeah.
It feels very much like cash against creatives.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a constant, like, a battle where we come to the table and Equity's like, we need living wages. And producers are like, fine, you can have living wages, but we can use your likeness whenever we want to. Okay. And then we walk away thinking we're both unhappy and neither of us has won. But it's like, it feels that way very much so, just kind of across the board.
Yeah.
And so when this pandemic happened, that did not change. And I mean, I can speak for Actors Equity because I'm a union member and I have been, you know, watching what they're doing and I have been getting their emails and getting the letters in the mail. And they have been very focused on taking care of their actors in a very myopic way.
Yeah.
That doesn't benefit anybody else.
No.
And here's the thing. if we want theater to succeed, actors need to succeed, stage managers need to succeed, producers need to succeed, directors, stage crew, ushers, everybody needs to succeed.
That's what theater community.
Exactly.
It's, yeah, yeah.
And so the fact is we are very self-focused and very insular, again, because that is what we know. That, you know, our union is our union, and these are the people that they are protecting. However, you cannot protect us at the detriment to another part of the theater community.
Because then you have no work.
We all fall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If the theaters can no longer exist because they don't have the money to keep the buildings up and running, then we don't have a place to put on those shows. If the producers cannot get money from anywhere in order to put on a show, or here's the thing, if they can get money, but we can't put on a show because we cannot physically be in the same room as each other, then we all need to come together and figure out what's going to work for the future. And I'm sorry, this is a very unpopular position to take, but this pandemic is not just gonna disappear.
No, it's not.
And you can say vaccine all you want to, but we still have to go through testing for that vaccine. And we still don't have, even if that vaccine works, we don't know for how long. And we don't know if we're ever going to have one of these pandemics again, because I'll also say that this coronavirus has now been tested again and has changed again enough. Like the proteins on the outside have changed enough to make it so that it's viable, not just through respiratory droplets, but they might be thinking that it could be an airborne disease now.
Yeah, I read that.
So these are all things that are very scary. And you touched on it, and I said we would talk about it later. Here we go.
Yeah.
For a very long time, I have maybe had another very unpopular position to take, but it's a position that I take nonetheless, because I never had the money to go or the time to go and see my Broadway shows whenever I wanted to. And so for a very long time, I thought it's not just that I don't have the time, because I would make the time if it was also a genre that I could afford to do monetarily speaking. It's not. It's a very expensive thing to go and see. By opening up the door to live streaming, or to be able to rent the Lincoln Center, you know, performance, or the performances that have been recorded, it would still give revenue to the people that deserve that revenue, but it would open up to a large portion of people that cannot afford to go and actually sit in those seats, but that desperately want to be a part of theater.
We've been having a lot of talks about this, because there's this incorrect notion that live streaming will cannibalize live theater, and it won't. I mean, we've been talking about this a lot in the think tank, and like, I mean, you can listen to Beyonce, or you can listen to Jay-Z, or you can listen to, you know, the Fugees. Might as well talk about them since I started this podcast about them, you know. And that doesn't mean you're not going to also buy a ticket to the concert.
They're still selling them out.
They're still selling them out. And, you know, Pamela and I did not grow up in New York City, right? So our way in was listening to the cast recording, was watching great performances on PBS. Like, this is how we had our inroads to falling in love with the theater, moving to New York City, wanting to be a producer, wanting to be an actor. And obviously, listen to us. It has not cannibalized our desire to want to go see live theater. And
Absolutely not.
This pandemic has really highlighted something that it's really highlighted a disconnect with the theater industry and the growth of technology, and how we're just so disjointed, and how we're just so archaic in so many ways of thinking about the business of theater.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, honest to God, it's like why we started the think tank, because we were like, there are other ways of making theater. There are other ways of making theater more accessible.
Yes.
And also joining with that, there are ways of making it more equitable.
Yes.
From an ethnic standpoint, from a gender standpoint, from a sexual orientation standpoint. Like, I don't understand why we've been constantly separating the business of theater with the equitability. I don't know.
Oh, I'll tell you why. Because the people that have been in charge since the start don't want to lose their power.
Oh, so totally.
They are willing for what they have to fall absolute into disarray and destruction because they hold on with their very fingernails the power that they think they have. And the thing is, if they had simply opened the doors from the very beginning, their power would have flourished and it would have meant so much more.
Yeah. I mean, it will be very interesting to see what happens. Like, I deeply feel that everybody, I'm telling you, please listen to the episode of Three on the Isle. The young man's name is Jeremy. Can't remember his last name.
You're really killing it tonight.
I know, killing it. But listen, he just has such a vision for the fact that, like, you know, this is streaming theater is not just a stopgap. Like, we really have to be thinking about new ways of making theater. There are new technologies. Yes. And also, like, you know, we have this conversation in the think tank. Like, if the theater community really got outside of their little sort of bubble, started to really think outside of the box, we could push these technology companies to open up and broaden this technology so that it worked better for live theater.
Yes.
Like, if we actually got behind this in a real way, we could be making some aggressive changes. But, like, because people just see it as a stopgap and are just sort of flat. It's not, you got, it's not. No, I'm telling you, it's not. It's not. And we really have to get on board with, like, it not just being a stopgap. I mean, I am hearing from this new crop of producer friends I have some really interesting ideas and things that they're doing and new ways of creating live theater, cabaret. I mean, it's really interesting. And I mean, I just think that, like, this is an opportunity to be innovative and stop doing everything the way that it used to be. Like, I don't know. And in my head, like, I've never been, theater has survived so many plagues, you know?
Yes.
It has.
Well, you know what, when the quarantine first happened, there was a meme that was being passed around. That was saying, imagine going through this quarantine without your Netflix, without your books, without your music, and tell me how unimportant and unessential the arts is.
That's right. I saw that too. Yes.
And
yes.
It's completely true. When we are at our lowest is when the arts are the most important.
The most important. The most important.
The Great Depression. Every war we've ever been to.
So true.
The arts have been right at the top of the list. Every president has been like, you know what? Yeah, we'll send money to the troops, but you know what else we need to do? We need to send in Bing Crosby.
That's right.
Yes.
Bing Crosby. I mean,
entertain our troops.
Marilyn Monroe. I mean, yes. So many. That's so true. I mean, White Christmas. Yes. Is like,
there's, like, a lot of those musicals that are based in the wartime that are all surrounding, like, the idea of the USO and going out and entertaining our troops and making sure that, because morale,
the new season of Maisel,
everything. Yes. I love Maisel. Maisel was a quarantine find for me. I binged it within the first week.
I never told you about it.
No, I knew about it. It was always on the list.
Okay.
But the problem with it was because it was on Amazon Prime and it is not an app that I ever go to. And so literally it's because not everything is free. So even though I pay for it, there are some shows I'm like, ooh, I want to watch this show. Oh, you have to rent it. Oh, you pieces of crap. I'm never watching you again. And that was where that came from. So I usually stick to Netflix and Hulu because they don't give me any surprises.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. Yeah. Yeah.
But no, I love Maisel, but that is exactly what it is. You know, Miriam is going through a divorce and she's dealing with all of these other issues that are coming up. And the thing that she does in order to bypass the kind of hardship in her life is to get on that stage and tell jokes.
Yeah.
And I will tell you from my perspective, I do theater because I love it. But I also know how it makes me feel to watch theater, and I want to do that for other people.
Yeah.
I want to make people feel something because that is important. I think it's so easy to get caught up and stuck in our heads about the stuff that we're going through in our lives, and all of us are dealing with some real crap right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so important to just find something that makes you feel that, and you can just disappear into it for just a little bit of time, because then you can come back and feel like, okay, I can handle something now.
Yeah.
And that's true of books, and that's true of music, and that is very, and also, I will also say.
Yeah. I will also say.
I say that a lot. We should get t-shirts.
Or masks.
Yeah, there you go. That when TV first came out, the movie industry was terrified that TV was going to take over and that their jobs were going to be destroyed. And what happened? Both of them became so much more popular than anybody ever imagined. So the same is going to be true of the Broadway as well.
Yeah.
The Broadway. The Broadway. I just said that unironically. That same is going to be true of the Broadway, where if you open it up and you make it accessible to more people and make it representative of more people, more people will take advantage of it. Yeah. And more people will love it and more people will come back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he made such a great point. And what was so wonderful about that interview as well is that, you know, one of the theater critics is like all about streaming and really does think it's the wave of the future. The other two, not so much.
Okay.
And so when he goes on there, I mean, they're not 100% converted, but it sort of opens their minds and opens their eyes in a way that they weren't necessarily willing to sort of do before. And hopefully they will bring him back, but they all said, you should come back. But like I said, I think it was Peter Marks he is like, streaming's the wave of the future. Like he's like, it's so good. I mean, you know, really open-minded, being really smart about it. And the other two were like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to.
Do you know, here's the issue.
And so interesting.
This is something that I've been held captive by as well.
Yeah.
There's this, you immediately kind of go, yeah, that's a great idea. But then you think logistically, how would we do it? And can the technology support it? And right now the answer is no.
No.
But that is why I think if you had the theater voices along with the technology voices and you met in the middle and said, this, how can we make this happen?
Yeah.
There are people that are thinkers like that.
Yeah.
That can do it. But I can also understand why they're skeptical because, yeah, but how would you do it? Like how?
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, right? Is like, we as theater people, we're not coders. Like we didn't make Zoom, right?
No.
So we have to tell the people who know what they're doing in this platform because we know what we're doing in the theater platform.
Yes.
So the only way to make change is to get together and say, how can we make this thing happen? Because actors need to work. Musicians need to work. Producers need to work. Writers need to work. Stage, like everybody needs work.
Yeah.
So if everyone needs to be working, we need to come together and figure out how we can make that happen, because yes, we all need to make money and we all need to make sure people can pay their rent, and everybody wants entertainment because yes, they're sitting at home or locked in this place. And you're right, it's not getting better. I mean, look at the numbers. A lot of states are just doing so horribly.
Oh, Florida.
So horribly.
Talking to you, Arizona.
I mean, what? Yeah.
Arizona and Florida, yeah, and Texas.
Oklahoma. Yeah.
Oh, Lordy.
Not doing great. So I think that, like, it's just such a good time to, mm-hmm, to have new ideas. And
yeah,
I think we need to not be afraid of it.
There's no risk of having those new ideas right now.
And failing.
Right.
So you fail. Big whoop-de-doo. Like, figure it out.
This is the perfect opportunity for you to fail.
Yeah, it really
is.
Because
it doesn't matter.
No. There's no precedent for it.
Right.
So it's not like somebody's going to judge you up against anyone else. Try it. Fail miserably. Figure out what you failed at. And do it better.
And honestly, the only way you know how to get better is to fail.
It really is.
And so I think it's an American thing. It might be a worldwide thing, but like this fear of failure is such a terrible thing to teach our children.
Yeah, it really
because
is.
Because failing is the only way you can succeed.
Yeah.
And if I'm afraid to fail, that means I'm afraid to try. And if I'm afraid to try, I will never succeed.
Right.
And I will fall on whatever the safe option is, and I will be miserable for the rest of my life. And I don't want to do that.
Yeah, same. I heard the richest place, and I've probably said this before, the richest place on earth is the cemetery.
Yes.
Yeah. So much talent, so much wasted talent.
And if you never shared it with anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so sad to me, the stories that you're right, that go right into the ground.
Yeah.
I want to hear those stories because
Same.
Those stories, this is what I love and also am just so disturbed by, especially now because all of these kind of stories are coming to the forefront now. But the idea that Native Americans told their stories from generation to generation, and we came in and completely decimated that.
Yeah.
And so now they don't even have their full history because we came in and tried to civilize them. And we came in and tried to like gentrify them, which is just the most ridiculous thing in the whole entire world. And so it makes me so sad and so angry and upset for them as a people to have lost that. But also it's so fascinating to me that they, you know, they just kind of picked up where they left off and moved forward from that point. And they're still generationally telling their stories. And I love that idea. And I want to hear those stories and I want to learn them and I want to be able to pass them on to someone else. I want there to be a stage version of something like that. I want to see that and I want to feel. And here's the thing too.
I started her off, guys. That is just like pulling one of those toy cords and it just goes.
<That's> so cute. But you love me.
I do.
Theater does make you feel. And I think the absence of that, of those stories, the absence of that representation allows for the supremacy of white America, the supremacy of male America. It allows for that to happen because we are not given the whole story. This goes back to the textbook issue, but it also goes to the idea, to the very core of theater and storytelling as a whole, is that we are not telling the full story. We are telling our version of the story.
That's right.
And
that's
for
right.
some reason, it becomes the most important.
Right.
And that should not be.
Right.
Because I can guarantee you, I will be just as moved hearing an indigenous person's story or an African descent person's story or someone from China telling their story as I would be from hearing a person whose story is very similar to my own. And I already know.
Yeah.
We've already heard those stories. I don't want to hear those anymore. I mean, yeah, there's a place for them. I'm not saying to get rid of them altogether, What I'm saying is we need to open up the space and allow for different stories and different voices to be heard.
Yeah.
And that will offer the opportunity of empathy to be learned as well.
Yeah.
Because that is something that is severely lacking. And that right now, that lack of empathy is at the very forefront of why Arizona and Oklahoma and Texas and Florida are failing so badly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
Because it's there's no compassion and there's no empathy.
Oh, I mean, those who lack the most empathy also tend to be the loudest. Ugh, so yes. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who do have and are wearing their masks and are trying hard to love people well and are trying to do the right thing. And some people think there are more of those than the other. I don't know. I just know I can control me. That's what I know I can control.
Well, and I will say too that love and empathy and showing that compassion is much more silent than complaining about having to wear a mask.
I just read before we got on this, this recording, someone said, love is quieter than anger. And I was like, well,
yeah.
You know, and that's why we know who's angry more than we know who's loving people well, because love is just quieter. You just do it.
The grease. It's like, you know, right. We've been talking about that forever. Yeah. Like Karen's voice is the loudest because, well,
did you see the Karen act?
Yes. And I'm living for it. I'm living. but you look at it, you know, I think the Karen movement, if it was a movement, I think it was a subversive movement. I don't think anyone planned on it being one, but here it is.
Yeah.
It started out of frustration of women not having a voice, but now it has become something that it was never meant to be. It didn't start out that way, but now it's become that. Where now it's like, you didn't listen when I was asking you for something nice. So now I'm going to demand what I want and when I want it and, you know, damn the consequences. And that is where I think we need to be really intentional about what it is we're speaking to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that note, guys,
thanks for sticking around.
Thank you for sticking around. And, you know, I feel we've left you with more hope than sadness because we're very hopeful about the theater. Yeah. Like, I'm just not worried.
No.
I'm just not worried about the theater. It's going to look radically different. And again, that's good.
That's a good thing. Theater always needs to change and to adapt. And I think it is well past time for that to have occurred.
Yeah.
And we can't, and the idea of having two Black people in a cast and saying that's diverse, that time has ended.
Yeah.
We can no longer fall back on that as being the thing that makes us outstanding in diversity. That's just a cop-out. When we get to a point where we are telling stories and there are Black people and Asian people and white people and gay people and trans people all on the stage together and nobody's commenting on it, that is when we have won. That is the change that we need. And the only way that we're going to get there is by listening to those people's stories and telling them.
This is my last note, but I've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Back when the 2016 Tonys were approaching and Eclipsed was on Broadway and Hamilton was on Broadway and Shuffle Along was on Broadway. There's this Hollywood Reporter interview that you can watch on YouTube and Lynn's on there. And I believe Danai is on there. And I think Leslie is on there as well. And so is Cynthia, because also A Color Purple was on there.
Oh yeah, that was a good year.
It was a fantastic year. Fantastic.
Yeah.
But here was the thing, right? So it was that awesome year. So I think the Gin Game was that year too. It was just like with Cicely Tyson and James Earl Jones. I mean, it was just bananas good. Yeah. The bananas good year. But here was the thing. It was a bananas good year.
Yeah. Okay.
One season, right? So they it's June. They're in this interview. Of course, the interviewer asked this question. Do you think, you know, looking at these shows that, you know, theater is becoming more diverse? And I mean, everyone knows all the people I just mentioned. I'm a huge fan of. I love Denai. I love Lupita, I think, was on there. So maybe it wasn't Denai. I think actually Lupita was on there. Lynn, Leslie, all of them were like, okay, wait a minute. We're too quick to begin to pat ourselves on the back and be like, we fixed it. I mean, look at all the Black people. That's just not, they're like, let's see how the next few seasons go.
Yeah.
And Lupita said, she said, once we are able to no longer comment on it because it is just happening all the time, that's when we know we've actually done something. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly to what Pamela just said. Like, that's to your point, is like, we see like, you know, 5 or 6 brown shows and we're all thinking like we fixed it too. And one season and the next season, it's as white as a piece of paper.
Yes.
And you're just like,
but even with the brown shows, that still doesn't show the diversity.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, it's heading in the right direction, but come on, there are more than just 2 colors in this world.
It's
just
really
like
true.
There are more than just 2 genders in this world.
Yeah.
And the moment that we finally are like, okay, fine. Yes, people can be who they are and what they are, and I'm willing to listen without judgment. That is when we can finally, you know, like succeed in this world. But I think that too is like, it's so difficult for individual people to even allow someone to be who they are. Not me. It's not my life. It's
right.
Your life. And
yeah.
I have something wrong with your life. Like, that's not for me to say.
Right.
That's what frustrates me. It's like, shut it. I feel like there's all of these kind of tactics to point the direction somewhere else where it looks good on us. But then you've got behind the camera, everything else is like in total disarray and disorder. And
yeah.
and this will be the last thing, because if you just keep me going, I'm just gonna keep going.
I keep pulling the cord and she
I
keeps
know,
going
hard, I'm sorry. Because I was talking with my dad earlier tonight, and he was, you know, we were talking about theater, we were talking about diversity, we were talking about, you know, all of this stuff, and I said the skeptical part of me comes out because in order to fix a problem this large,
yeah,
you have to take it down to the bare bones and build it up from scratch.
Oh, totally. You got to rip it out by its root.
But who's going to be willing to do that?
Right.
And the idea of doing it is so overwhelming that you're like, you know, and instead of doing that, you know, like if I bought a brand new house and the inspector, thank you, that's better. The investigator. Anyway, the inspector comes
too much
through.
Law and order.
I know, right? And he's like, so, okay, you need a new foundation. The siding on the house is falling apart. You've got termites and you need a brand new roof. So that's essentially the entire house.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy that house.
Right.
But if I didn't have an inspector come through and I just bought the house from the very beginning, then I might be tempted mm-hmm. to just put a Band-Aid on it because I made the mistake in buying it without the inspector going through and telling me all of these issues. And so now I'm kind of stuck with it. And I, you know, I can't really afford to tear it down and build a new house. And it's not really worth it anyway. It'd be worth more if I just burned it to the ground.
Right.
But that doesn't help me. You know, it's a very difficult position that we're all being put in. But if we all can kind of come around that fact that it is all of us that are in this together, mm-hmm. I think maybe it might be a little bit easier. I don't know. Listen.
Well, I mean, I think this pandemic has put us in a place where, like, you know, these shows I listed are projecting a spring opening, but like
you know, my sister and I were having this conversation because her fiance is a pathology doctor. Mm. And she's like, I mean, realistically, a vaccine isn't for, you know, from when they first started. So when they first started trying to make one, March, April, yeah. 18 to 24 months. So these shows are projecting, you know, spring, summer 2021. But I mean,
realistically, it's not.
Realistically, that may not, that's probably not going to happen. Like there's some talk here and there about September, but then also you have a bunch of anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
So even if there's a vaccine, like you can't make people take it. You know, yeah. Here's the thing. I'm just going to like leave. I'm going to leave on this note. I'm actually going to leave on this note. This, we have no idea what's going to happen, yeah. right? We have no idea what's going to happen. All we can think about and the place we've been put in is taking it one day at a time mm-hmm. and like Frozen 2, because I've gone down that docuseries rabbit hole. Do the next right thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's what we can do, is we can only do the next right thing. And so I really believe for those of you out there that are innovators, like now's the time to begin to innovate. Like if you have new ideas, this is the time to birth them.
Yeah.
But you need to be thinking outside of the box and outside of these old systems.
Right.
Because if things do take 18 to 24 months, I think a lot of the root pulling I've been talking about, it's going to have no choice but to happen, because from a financial standpoint, from a business standpoint, a lot of these systems we're used to are just going to crumble. They just yeah. will.
Yes.
So really be thinking about how you can be supporting actors, writers, stage managers, all of the people who make theater. Take all of the websites we've talked about. Take all of social media, mm-hmm. your senators, call people, email people. I mean, you can email us if you have questions, because like we do that, but just really get out there and mm-hmm. make some stuff happen.
Yeah.
And stop. Don't think about the way that things worked before, because I'm telling you,
yeah,
everything's about to change. And it's extremely exciting.
And I'm so excited to see where this is going to be. I really yeah. am so excited. Same. This is where the hope comes in, because it yeah. is exciting. Like this is new. This is fresh. And this is yeah. this should really excite everybody. This should yeah. like wake us all up and to be like, okay, all right, I don't know what the future holds. And that's like, that's exciting. Let's do it. Let's do it together.
Yeah. It's good. It's good, guys.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Pamela will have those links put up for you mm-hmm. so you can go there, and the social media handles. We love you. Get excited.
Yes.
Don't be sad.
Stay healthy,
it's all good.
Get creative and like
put a mask on.
Yes. Oh, please do.
Put a mask on.
Wear a mask.
Please.
Wear a
mask. I love you. Bye.
# wear a mask.
Wear a freaking mask.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.